In 2015, ABC Grandstand will continue to deliver sports coverage like no other. Still to come, the AFL season continues.
He got a lot of it! He got all of it!
We go trackside for the Spring Racing Carnival.
They're ready for a start.
Then it's time to take the crease. Cricket. Australia take on the West Indies over summer. ABC Grandstand is the place for sports coverage.
Switch on.
On your mobile, online, and on your radio.
Do you love sport? Then find out what's coming up on the sporting calendar with ABC Grandstand Online. Simply log on to abc.net.au/grandstand, click on the broadcast schedule, and there you have it. Plus, you can catch up on the latest news and sports results. There's a world of great sport content for you to explore on the ABC Grandstand website. ABC Grandstand, on mobile, online, and on your radio.
You're with Grandstand.
Around Australia.
It's 9 for 101. The game's just about up. And Coit comes running into bowl and hits the pad and appeal for LBW on Shrub Shots. It's out. Australia have won. A huge victory. Potentially regaining the Ashes. They're embracing each other in a huge puddle out there in the middle of the ground. And they've won this game by a mile, by 161 runs.
Hello and welcome once again to the ABC Grandstand Ashes podcast. Jeff Lemon joining you in the captain's chair, and we're looking out over the late afternoon sun here at Canterbury after Australia have just demolished England comprehensively in the only test match in this series. Joining me on the podcast today, Middlesex women's captain and BBC cricket speaker Izzy Westbury, Vic Spirit player and heir to the throne of greatest women's cricketer in the world, Anna Lanning, and no pressure, and my constant companion here at ABC Grandstand, Adam Collins. Welcome everybody, and a really important result here in this series. Australia came over, they lost the first one day quite comprehensively in a run chase there. They came back and won the next two, and now they've taken England apart in a test match. Izzy Westbury, tell me what stood out to you over the last 4 days here at Canterbury.
Australia were just amazing. I've got a little fangirldom going on about Perry and Lanning M, the other one. Jess Jonathan as well. That bat, the timing, those cover drives. Oh my goodness, I could sit it all day and watch them. Nothing happened from the England side. We were outplayed in every single area. The harangue you hear, that's not putting the England team back together. That's banging the nail on the coffin as you put England women's cricket down. Let's talk about the men, shall we?
There is a fair bit of de-rigging happening outside our window, so some interesting sound effects going out there. But Anna, you've just come up from the Australian change room, so what's the vibe down there?
Yeah, they're all pumped. It's obviously a great win. England are on the back foot now. They've got to win all three T20s. So I think Australia have signed it up, to be honest.
Good, confident words. Good word. I like it when we actually get a player to say something, you know, instead of going, oh, well, you know, of course we respect them. They're a great team and we have beaten them comprehensively a lot, but I mean, we still respect them entirely. I don't know. Where does the respect come?
Well, we've watched a lot of rubbish cricket over the last 2 months, Jeff, as we've been travelling around watching the Australian men play. That was really exciting and really interesting. It was old-fashioned, nutritional test match cricket, the sort of cricket we were brought up on watching in white clothes and red balls, and that's what we saw this week from the women. It was an excellent standard of cricket, and I've not been someone who's seen a lot of women's cricket, but I'll be leaving here an advocate for it, certainly.
The first day particularly, it was a real kind of arm wrestle, like proper struggle, proper old-fashioned stuff, and you need just one player to really give a dominant performance, and Jess Jonathan was the one on the first day. You know, no one else was really timing it fluently, but she came out and made 99 and held together the Australian innings as they racked it up to 274.
Well, there can't be many players who've debuted in a test match and been man of the match, as it were, a woman of the match in this case. So she was outstanding. In that first innings, when she came in and was operating at 5 for 99, Australia could have easily been all out for 150 or worse, and ended up ploughing through to, 274 in the end, and that was the difference. No other player passed 50 in the match, and Jess Jonathan, without a doubt, along with, obviously, at least Perry today, taking 6 for 34 or whatever it was, they were the major differences.
But I mean, Jonathan sets that up, but she's made 99 in the first, 54 in the second. Really interesting point for me is that she's someone who mostly played as a tail ender and has sort of only become a genuine batsman really in the last probably 12 months. I mean, what have you probably would have seen more of her over her career, Anna. Has this surprised you?
Not really. I mean, she's shown glimpses throughout her younger years. So I played against her in underage stuff, and yeah, I think she played out of her skin today, or over the last couple of days. So it's great to see. You know, people often say, oh, we will rely on Megan Elise too much, but I think the test showed our depth.
Yeah, interesting there that, I mean, Meg, we talk about her as the best female batsman in the world. She is. It was really significant that she wasn't relied on in this game.
Yeah, but that was the same with England as well. You look at Charlotte Edwards, you look at Sarah Taylor. Everyone talks so much about Sarah Taylor, and my goodness, she is the most talented batsman, I think. I'm sorry, I think she's more talented than Meg. I'm going to put it out there. But she comes away with this match on a pair. She's Perry's bunny. Like, she really, really is. Perry did her both times round. And then Charlotte Edwards as well. She's an amazing batsman. And that ball straight after lunch. What? This is my question. What do Australians eat for lunch? Yeah? After both sessions there, Perry did it this time. I think it was quite the other time as well. She came out and they got wickets straight away after lunch. Don't tell me it's Vegemite, because no.
But Taylor was completely culpable today. That was an astonishingly bad cricket shot. In the context of coming out on a king pair as well, because she was dismissed first ball in that Perry spell on day two, when, you know, that Vegemite sandwich that netted her 2 wickets in 2 balls to start the second session. To play a shot where she's effectively trying to hit over the pickets, fourth ball, against the best fast bowler in the world, when the ball's pitching off stump, it seems inconceivable that she could have been, to someone I've not seen a lot of her play, but it seems implausible that she could be as good as you're saying, Izzy, based on what we've seen today. You know what I mean? It seems to the naked eye, how can someone play a shot like that?
I want to say wait till the T20s, but now I'm really scared.
It was a bit of a Peterson shot, though. I mean,
you can say that. She's almost a Peterson player. She has that flair, she has that attack, and we've been critical of her in the past that she's made sort of 30s, 40s and not gone on and scored them. But today and yesterday, I mean, I felt the first shot that she got out to was the one she was playing across the line. Mm. She almost overcompensated this time. She stood really far outside her leg stump, huge trigger, and then that horrible, feeble kind of dangle of the bat outside off. It was just waiting for Perry to come in and just, you know, here's the gate, come through. Off you go, and she did.
4 balls, I think, she faced in the game, Sarah Taylor. And that's massive. I mean, she's the one. She's the number three. She's the one who they needed to score big if they were going to have any hope in that run chase. But I don't know. England just seemed to shut up shop very quickly. It was as soon as the first couple of wickets went down in the chase, they went, no, it's impossible. We can't do it. We need to try to bat out the day, which didn't seem like it was ever likely to succeed.
Especially in the first innings, the lack of enterprise after lunch, I found astonishing that they're on the back foot, but since when is grinding down to nothing? They were going at one stage at, I think, what did they make? There was 38 maidens on day two. I know Australia had to dig in on day one as well, but they continued to tick the board over at crucial times. England never showed any sense of doing that.
What happens with Australia? I mean, they're on a high, they're rolling along well. It's this odd thing in the multi-format series. You know, do you keep the same team going into your T20s, or do you have T20-specific players who have to come in and some players have to go out of this side?
Yeah, the saying is don't change a winning formula, so it'll be interesting to see what they do selection-wise. But, I think we're just going to keep playing positive cricket, and I think, to be honest, I don't think England are trying to win this match. Bit controversial there.
Well, Charlotte Edwards almost said it herself. I think they got to 5 wickets or whatever they got. They got to a certain point in the match, and she sort of said in the press conference, we were going to play for 2 points, which is like the worst thing you can hear from anybody, let alone the England captain.
But isn't this a challenge of the format? Because the 2020s carry the same weight as the limited overs games.
Yeah.
I would like to see all three games having a different numerical value on that. So you take out of the equation the tie, because the tie means you retain, right? So England were in a situation today where a draw was effectively as good as a win. Because Australia are the best T20 side in the world.
Yep.
They would have known that coming into today.
Yep.
Not ideal. The incentives are wrongly aligned, if you like.
Yeah. And I don't think England would have risked losing to win. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because then they're right out of things.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is a new format though, isn't it? It's a format that's been going on. This is the third time it's been played, and this time the test used to be 6 points, now it's 4 points. So they're still fiddling with it and changing it. And I know Australia were really, you guys are steaming last time when you were like, oh, we won more matches than you guys did, we lost the test, so boo-hoo. I mean, you know, just play better, which they did. I mean, I'm going to say you did. It was absolutely amazing. And
Win the test.
Just win the test, yeah, come on.
Are there any chance in the T20s, Izzy? Realistically, can England win the one required?
So Australia, three-time world champions? Yeah, we'll smash you guys.
But what is the record, though? Like, could England conceivably win Australia in a T20 game? Does it happen?
Oh, yeah, they could. I mean, if they choose the right people for the start. I mean, Danny Hazel, number one T20 bowler in the world. She is the best off spinner, the best spinner in England. She's probably one of the best bowlers, just full stop, right, in any format of the game. She hasn't even been in the squad for England. Like, if she doesn't play in the T20s, then there's something going on here. It's squad. I'm quite worried as well, because I think Grace Harris is coming out to bolster the T20 squad for Australia, and she hits flat sixes. Now, England don't hit sixes, let alone flat sixes. This girl is, well, she's a T20 superstar. And Jess Cameron, she hasn't played, you know, in the one day as well.
Yeah, that one bamboozled me. She played in the first one day game.
Did she? Yeah, she did.
Made 30-odd, you know, at a runnable, you know, was serviceable, and then was left out thereafter.
But that was because she only played in the first one because Nicole Bolton couldn't play. She got concussion right. The day before. That was always the plan. But she could play in the T20s. I mean, she had sixes like no other person.
Oh, yeah. Jess Cameron's one of the hardest, longest hitters of the ball I've ever seen.
I can remember seeing Jess Cameron at Belrive, I think, you know, getting down for a sweep shot and just creaming a six over the fence at Belrive, you know, not a sort of token brought in boundary sort of six. Tell me about, you know, Elise Perry gets all the attention outside, you know, most people in the team because she's the sort of celebrity women's cricketer, but as a bowler today she was supreme.
Yeah, she was phenomenal. I've spoken to Meg a little bit about her, and she says she's the most dedicated, hardworking athlete she's ever seen. I personally think she's nearly a better batter than she's bowler. Her technique is flawless, and it's no wonder that she makes 50s every game. So she bowled phenomenal today.
I thought Schutt's in-swing as well was outstanding as well, especially after Perry made the initial incision in both innings. She came, it was the length she bowled at. A lot, when you bowl a swing, you'd often be tempted to bowl too full and try and bowl the wicket-taking delivery every ball. She managed to bowl a very consistent length and then wait for that big in-swinging Yorker, which was so damaging today, picking up, what was it? It was the third wicket today she picked up. Was it Knight she got leg before? It was very tidy bowling in any case.
Yeah, it was Winfield.
Winfield.
LB.
Yeah.
For Schutt, and she got, what, four for in the first innings as well. I mean, when you've got someone to come in and back up the initial.
And also, she's another player that didn't feature in the first one day and then got brought in, got four wickets. This is to me as well, the strength and depth in Australia. England don't sort of seem to trust their extra player, or not extra players, the ones outside that core. We saw Meg was changing up the bowlers in that third day. Like, she didn't let anybody really bowl more than five overs, whereas Charlotte Edwards, she literally used four bowlers and she didn't dare use anybody outside that core, like your Nat Sivers, like Georgia Elwes, like Heather Knight. There's other bowlers there, and it was almost as though she shut up shop like the batsman did and just thought, I don't trust anybody.
And Cross was terribly underused as well, I thought. Yeah. I don't think she bowled that badly, but she only got six overs in the second innings and considerably less than the openers in the first. We see it all the time. Meg was, you know, I think you had in your article the other day, barely used a bowler for more than six overs in a spell.
Yeah, just keep them going.
And it wasn't the case for England.
This is the Ashes.
The Ashes.
You're with Grandstand.
We simply weren't good enough over the 4 days, and credit to Australia, they outplayed us, and, you know, we're not delivering as a batting unit, and, if, you know, you can't expect to compete with teams like Australia if you're not delivering it in the batting department.
You are on the ABC Grandstand Ashes podcast with Jeff Lemon, Anna Lanning, Izzy Westbury and Adam Collins. And now that we're on the topic of England, we might as well stay on England. The one thing I'm going to take out of this test match that's a positive is a deep affection for Catherine Brunt. Mm. She won me over in this game. I loved watching her play. She hated the fact that they were behind in the game. She wasn't prepared to be there. She did everything in her power to get them out, but it seemed like she was battling away on her own for a lot of this test match.
I've stolen her hat. I'm going to keep that, and I'm going to keep that and sort of channel it into my aggression in the game. She's the same everywhere she plays, be it club, be it playing for Yorkshire. She's a real Yorkshire lass. Be it England, that fire, that passion, that intensity. But she was the only one. And you can see that. So when they had that team huddle, England were behind before they went out to bowl, and she sort of stepped away and she put her cap over her eyes, and then she's channeling this, just waiting, that sort of calm before the storm. And then she just unleashed when she went out to the pitch. It was just incredible.
You could actually see her eyeballing her teammates in that huddle after the first week, going, come on, come on, come on, like one after another, like Leighton Hewitt or Peter Siddle. You know,
individually, I need each of
them. Eyeballing each of them, saying she wanted more out of all of them. It was brilliant. Loved it.
Would you like to poach her?
Oh, absolutely. She's definitely someone you want on your team. So, the way she bowled and batted as well, especially in the first inning, she came out, you know, we probably could have rolled them, you know, pretty cheaply, and came out knock 30, I think it was. And yeah, you definitely want her on your team.
She was just so fired up as well. And, I mean, we talked to her in a press conference about that innings and said, you know, why is it that you batted so differently? And she was very careful not to criticise her teammates, but just sort of said, well, I think personally that I need to score when we're a long way behind. That's just the way that I would play the game, you know, which was maybe a bit of a dig, but it was just such a different attitude. She came out and said, all right, we're 150 behind, we need to catch up, which everybody else had seemed to think, well, if I just occupy the crease for 6 hours and score 0 runs, that'll somehow help.
yeah, she plays a natural game and she wasn't going to let anything adapt that. And that's what I didn't get, was that, you know, Natsiva, you know, she's the one person that when I'm fielding to anywhere near her, I don't want to be in the vicinity within 50 metres because I'm going to break my hand. Yet she faced some ridiculous amount of doppels, Greenway as well. She reverse sweeps, she sweeps, she plays all around the park. She faced, I think, out of 100 balls, she faced 94 doppels. Catherine Brunt doesn't do that.
So what is it? What's gone wrong with England? I mean, what's in their team room? Are they just getting too preoccupied with it being Test cricket and feeling like they need to be defensive? What's your read on it?
Yeah, I think Izzy touched on it earlier. I think they sort of don't want to go away from their plans, and I don't want to criticise Lottie too much.
That's right. You can criticise. No one listens to this podcast.
She's got to play her in the state stuff, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, like she's been amazing for you know 20 years or whatever it is, and yeah, like I said, I don't want to be too critical, but yeah, I don't think they. I think they've got their plans and I think they stick to them, whereas I think Meg's a really positive captain, and I think, you know, in the men's games you sort of see bowlers come in and bowl 10, 12 overs in a row, and it's not how it works in women's cricket. So, you know, you got to keep the batters on the toes and keep them from getting on top of you.
You can just hear some carousing Australians perhaps coming through on our microphones here. Was Meg worried about having to captain a test match? You know, it's a very different challenge for a captain who's used to the limited overs stuff.
Yeah, we sort of spoke before she went away, and she's sort of saying she'd rather play more test matches or play none at all, because it's just so new and it's so different, and you sort of don't know how to go about it. But yeah, I think she captained really well. She obviously didn't bat too well, but that's all right. I'm sure she'll come out firing in the T20s.
It's a bit of an M&M thing, right? It's like you've got one shot, you know, to not miss your test match.
Oh, gosh, Jeff.
How do you...
You can't edit that out, mate. It's got to stay.
It's all right. I'll stand by that. I literally know all of the words to Lose Yourself. I can do it. It takes 3.5 minutes, so I won't a cappella it right now. But it does seem really unfair to say, okay, you get to play a test match, and then maybe in a year's time or 18-month time, you'll play one more. And then maybe a couple of years after that, you'll play one more. It just seems ridiculous.
Well, we're both domestic cricketers. I mean, state, county as well. And I think the only longer form game that I've played has been when I've been in and around the performance squad and the academy stuff. We played a red ball 2-day, and that's it. I mean, I don't know whether you've played any more longer format cricket.
Yeah, I back home at club, we played 2-day stuff when I first started playing. So that was when I was 13, 14 years old. So that got scrapped because... You know, we don't play anything, so there's only the test match every 2 years, so it's very different.
Do you guys want more? Like, is that what you'd rather be playing?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting for sure. To bring it back would be something different, especially the way cricket's going now, T20 focus and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'd love to play. I think it'd make the test matches more interesting when they come around.
The front foot defence is my best shot. I think I'd thrive on the format personally.
Well, if you were out there today, that's
hey guys,
that's all they were about was the front foot defence.
It'll have to be a catalyst for it, though. I mean, the bowling was such of a high quality in this match. We can talk ill of England a lot in this match, but the Shrapsole on day one, in much the same way that Shoot on day two, the swing bowling was of a standard that, forget about gender, this was as good a swing bowling as you'll see. And I think that you only see that kind of groove gotten into when you've got players batting defensively, therefore playing longer form cricket with a red ball. If anyone watched that game throughout the 4 days that we did and saw that bowling, they'd want to see far more of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's one we really should touch on. You know, Shrapsole was 4 wickets in about 27 balls or something. Barely went for a run in that spell, and, you know, took the heart out of the Australian batting lineup, and it took that brilliance from Jonathan to restore it after that. It was a phenomenal spell.
And she was arguably better yesterday, that 11-over spell, 1-for-10. She was outstanding yesterday. Very unlucky not to pick up 3 or 4 wickets. It could have been a game-changing performance from her. And as I said, that just won't happen in white ball cricket. When in T20, all sloggers are effectively created equal anyway. I mean, you know, if you're a good bowler or a bad bowler, you're going to go for six plus an over. You won't see that artwork that is swing bowling with the white ball.
I'm going to catch you out there because... Last year in the World T20s, she won Player of the Tournament and it was just a swing ball masterclass with a white ball cricket. And she was just, it's like late hooping in swing. And the great thing about Anya Shrapsole is that she can convert that from white ball to red ball cricket, which you don't see in this. And again, in talking about Megan Shutt as well, it's the control as well and being able to bowl those lines, those lengths consistently. And that was, it was incredible. Yeah, we talk about Brunt, but Shrapsole as well. There's the shining lights. Oh.
Sure, but I mean, it comes down to, you know, having the bigger canvas to paint on, doesn't it? I mean, Anna, for instance, a lot of the T20s you've played for Victoria, you won't even get a bat because you're coming in a bit down the order. They chase down a target, 3 wickets down, you know, you don't even get out there. To be able to go out sort of an hour into a six-hour day and know, you know, I've got 5 hours to bat if I'm good enough. Would that? I mean, that to me, that seems like it would be a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know girls back home are itching to play a bit more two-day stuff even, and then go into the test. So I think it'll help with techniques as well. I know T20's sort of become a sloggeropolis sort of thing, but yeah, I think absolutely. I think it'll be the techniques will be helped out.
The Ashes, live on your home of cricket, ABC Grandstand.
This test match was massive for us. We knew that if we could win it, it'd certainly put us in the box seat, and we came here to win the test match, and it's great that we've been able to do that.
You are on the ABC Grandstand Ashes podcast with Jeff Lemon, Adam Collins, Izzy Westbury and Anna Lanning, and we're talking now about the general state of women's cricket, its potential and its future.
Well, you've just been, Anna's just been announced as in the new WBBL Melbourne Stars, so I mean, I think that's a great opportunity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think not only it's a good opportunity for overseas players to come over and play in Australia, but for young kids to come through as well. I know certainly at Victoria the last couple of years, our top six was basically Australian players. So, you know, people like myself and, you know, people like Molly Strano, Kirsty Lamb, that sort of thing, haven't had an opportunity to you know, really have a go. And I think it's a great opportunity.
I think the way it'll play out, well, I hope the way it'll play out, is that it'll develop a culture in the same way of women's tennis. It's different, it's distinct. People watch women's tennis for different reasons than they watch men's tennis. It's more more angular, there's more technique required. I like to think that the women's
timing.
Game, now it's on TV. Yeah, timing indeed. Playing around the 360th degree field will be something that, when we're watching it on TV, and a WBBL is the best opportunity for this, it will start to respect it in a different kind of way, and in turn it'll, you know, like develop its own little niche, and hopefully the money will follow that.
But the key thing being, when that happens, you'll start to get more players, and when you want to keep raising the standard of the game, it's just based on the kind of player pool you can draw from. You know, you're not going to get your absolute amazing star players from having a few thousand players at state level or you know, at any level, which, you know, currently the numbers are fairly restricted, and Cricket Australia and the ECB are both trying to grow those numbers. But, I mean, we're looking for ways to get more people involved in the game.
Well, there's a science, isn't there? They talk about it with the associate and affiliate nations, which Izzy knows a bit about how they develop. It's a science. It's the amount of players you've got will reflect how well you go in that scale as you work your way up towards playing international cricket. The same has to be the case for women's as well. The more playing, the better the standard, the more commercially viable.
But you can say the same as well in England. They're going to get the Women's Cricket Super League announced as well. It's a £3 million investment over 4 years. There's also potential with the WBBL to make a new market, a new brand. It's also distinct from the men. The men carrying on with their sort of T20 formats in the counties and stuff. For us, we're kind of breaking away. And it's a risk, yeah, sure it is, because it might just plunder and fall. But equally, it could be a template almost for men. It's franchise system, although they studiously avoid the word franchise hosts or bids or whatever on earth they want to say, but it's different and it's breaking away. And as Adam said, I think the key to women's cricket thriving is that it's marketed as something different.
Have they given you much info, Anna, about the WBBL, how it's supposed to work, what the plans are, what the big picture stuff is? Because it all seemed very quick. They just suddenly said, oh, we're going to have one, here it is, it's happening, but we haven't actually heard much concrete. And it, you know, it's going to be starting in a couple of months, really.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we'd heard rumours and that sort of thing over the last year or so, and that was going to come in. But you're right, I'm pretty sure they were waiting till the World Cup had finished for them to really start thinking about it, to be honest. And yeah, we've got some draft fixtures and that sort of thing, and where we're going to be playing. But Izzy touched on it earlier, we're playing, you know, two games in one day, which is, to me, ridiculous. You know, the way that they're trying to move women's cricket forward into a, you know, a professional environment, and I think doing things like that is really not right.
So they're doing that just to cram in the fixture, basically.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, girls have to get time off work and that sort of thing, so it's more on the weekends and that sort of thing.
Can you give us a sense of how many games will be played in the WBBL, like, just for those who are listening and may not know much about it?
Yep, so there's so eight teams, obviously. They follow the men's, all the franchises. Mm. So we play each team twice, and then there's finals on top of that.
So it'll go for a good 6 to 8 weeks. It'll be the same length of time the men's is going for.
Yeah, pretty much. It pretty much follows the men, and I think each team's got at least one double header.
Yep.
So yeah, I think the right steps have been taken, but I still think there's a long way to go.
And there's some commercial television covering it as well Is that just the ones that are being played, the doubleheaders with men, or are the commercial TV networks covering other games as well?
Yeah, just the ones that are playing before the men.
Okay.
Right. So that, so it's sort of, it's part opportunity, part frustration probably at the moment for the players. You're thinking, well, it's great that something's happening, but I don't know. There just always seems to be a
caveat.
Something holding back women's cricket. Sure, we'll have a women's Ashes. You can play one test match, you know. Well, if it's an Ashes, why not make it a test series? Or why not do something different with it? But then you can't really have test series when you don't have a first-class structure to support that. Okay, so why don't we have a first-class structure? Because it's expensive. Okay, well, you're a tax-exempt organisation, you know, Cricket Australia. You don't pay any tax because you're supposed to be supporting the game. So how about you fund a first-class competition? I don't know. It's crazy.
You should be the cricket czar, Jeff.
It's crazy enough to work.
In my world, you're the king.
If Southo is listening...
He may be.
He may be.
Hi, James, if you are listening. We support women's cricket at the ABC.
And, you know...
We covered every ball of this.
And
we're committed to it.
Look, the Cricket Australia media guys have been very supportive of this series. They've been all over it, working very, very hard. So, you know, good on them. But, yeah, it'd be nice to... Just to, you just want that bit more, that kind of critical mass. It feels like we're so close to really getting somewhere.
Jeff, you're preaching to the converted. I mean, we're those players that sort of struggle away. I mean, at the end of the day, I count cricket here. I play for nothing. I paid to play almost. We're going to Yorkshire tomorrow. Oh, God, I'm going to Yorkshire tomorrow. Yorkshire tomorrow to go and play our T20 format. So I'm playing for Middlesex up there, and we don't get paid to cover the transport. Really? We get the hotel, got a bed. That's all right.
But you have to pay your own expense up there, your own train ticket.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah. I love cricket. What can I say?
Yeah, you do. You're committed.
I think it's just going to take one person to grab it by the balls, to be honest, and like Kerry Packer did with the World Series cricket. You know, I think someone's just got to bite the bullet and invest money. You might lose money in the first couple of years, but I think it's an untapped market. And, you know, we've shown here that it's a very different game, women's cricket to men's cricket. But I think fans would actually enjoy it because it is... you know, not going to hit massive sixes and that sort of thing. I mean, the girls can do it, but it's all about working the ball around and that sort of thing.
And we hear so much whinging in men's cricket about how, or the, you know, their techniques are all gone. Everyone has to bag everybody because they don't, because that's apparently, you know, when you don't know much about cricket, you say things like, oh, they don't have proper techniques anymore, because it makes you sound like you're very learned. But women's cricket, they do. They have excellent techniques because they need to have them.
Well, it's something that's quite common, I've heard quite often, is that when sort of male cricket followers who have followed it for a number of years, when they actually watch women's cricket, their first sentence is, oh my goodness, you play cricket. And then they watch it and they go, oh, actually, you're quite good. And then after that, they start enjoying women's cricket almost more because they go back, they hark back to the times when it was all about timing and technique. And that's what women's cricket, I still think, has a lot more than the men.
Yeah, I think this week, though, in terms of the way it was picked up, my perception was this was the game where social media really embraced it. The limited overs games as well that happened a few weeks ago, it seemed to me, using Twitter and Facebook as a rough guide, it's cut through far more than it has before. So, I don't know. Small steps, but important ones.
So, Anna, what makes you go, I'm going to dedicate so much of my time and effort and energy to playing a game that you're not necessarily getting much or any financial reward out of, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's just the love of the game. And I know that sounds cliche, but I think it's a fantastic game. I think it's the best game in the world. And the people you get to meet, the places you get to travel and that sort of thing is really special.
So you're just determined to keep playing, to keep putting in that time and effort. I mean, you're hopeful that things will start to change as you go along, and you know, maybe you're at a tipping point in history where by the end of your career things will be much more supportive for female athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think players nowadays have to give a lot of credit to the players that have gone before. Mel Jones, Betty Wilson, people like that. I think you know, that they were very harshly done by, and but if it wasn't for them, then we wouldn't be in the position that we are now. And people like Meg and Elise now, I think in a few years' time that girls will really benefit from it.
And that is probably enough from us today on the ABC Ashes Grandstand podcast. My thanks to our guests in the studio, Izzy Westbury, Anna Lanning and Adam Collins. We're checking out from Canterbury after the women's test was wrapped up by Australia, who were leading 8-2 in the women's Ashes. And we'll be back with you with our next episode just before the Oval Test to preview Michael Clarke's glorious farewell to Test cricket. We look forward to joining you again then.
Thanks.
Experience more live sporting choice with ABC Grandstand Digital Radio.
ABC Grandstand.
The dedicated digital station guaranteed to keep you up to date with all things sport. ABC Grandstand also streams online. Visit abc.net.au/grandstand for the Grandstand digital broadcast schedule, live stream, videos and the latest sports news. ABC Grandstand. If it moves, we'll call it.
ABC Grandstand.